Welcome back.
Welcome to Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix, part three.
Part the
Thank
three.
You for holding up three fingers.
Part the trace.
Part the trace. So last time, a lot of stuff happened. Here's what you missed on Carrie and Emmy remember Harry Potter.
To the best of our abilities.
Yes.
Which are not what defines us, but rather our choices.
But rather our choice to record these podcasts.
Exactly.
Yeah, so last time we talked about there was some occlumency going on,
yep.
But now that's done.
Right, because
Harry's a jerk.
He didn't intend to go through... Yes, you're right. Because Harry intentionally chooses to go through the Pensieve and look through Snape's memories, which is not cool. Like,
I get it.
No.
But not cool.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Don't do that.
So that happened, and then... Emmy left you at a cliffhanger.
Dun, dun, dun!
No, because... So, the DA is practicing in the room requirement.
That's like, the Dumbledore's Army.
Dumbledore's Army.
Haven't been tuning in.
Which, if you were just jumping in on this podcast, probably go back a couple.
One of my favorite lines in Return of the Jedi is when at the beginning, C-3PO sees Han Solo and Frozen and Carbonite, and he goes... Look, R2-D2, it's Han Solo. It's Captain Solo. And he's still frozen in carbonite. And it's like, in case anyone didn't see The Empire Strikes Back, we're gonna explain this to you.
I love those moments in movies. I also love the, explanatory sentence that needs to be said. Like, in Harry Potter 2, when Fox... In the movie, when Fox, saves Harry by, crying on him, Harry's
right.
Oh, right, Phoenix tears have healing powers.
Right.
And I'm like, for the audience at home.
There are things like that in the Gospels, though. There's little, asides, Matthew does that.
Yeah.
Mark, not so much, because Mark's just sort of,
But Mark's, least number of words possible.
Right, exactly. Let's tell the story quickly. I've been writing curriculum on Matthew and Mark this week, so they're all in my head.
Nice.
Luke's next week.
I've been writing random curriculums for finals.
Good. What'd you write them on?
One was on, I did a 8-week session, or 8 weeks, on each week was a different character in Acts.
Nice.
Or person in Acts. Bookended by Peter and Paul.
Oh, those guys.
Those guys. And then this one I'm writing is on different instances of character based, but kind of event based too, on resistance of empires. So Esther and Daniel and bum, bum,
bum, bum. Good thing that's not timely or related to anything else
right.
that's going on in the world.
No,
at all.
Nothing.
Nope. Empires are over.
Yeah, there's no such thing as an empire anymore.
Definitely not. Especially not in Christian countries.
No.
Mm-mm.
No. So anyway.
So, curriculum.
The DA is practicing in the room of requirement, and the door opens, and no one comes in, and Harry's like, what? And then just is like, whatever. And then sees Dobby.
You think he'd be like, stop?
You think he'd, yeah.
Someone in an invisibility cloak just came in, or something.
Right.
Someone just
and
got into the room.
The room of requirement, you, have to know...
You have to know what's going on in it.
Yeah.
Well, it's Dobby, yeah.
Right.
But yeah.
So, for someone to, for the door, the door's not going to just randomly open for people.
Right, exactly. And, he knows if everybody's at the DA, and so I'm like, oh, Neville's late again.
Right. Oh, wait, Neville's over there. Anyway, so Dobby comes in, and he's like, nah, and tweaking out, and then essentially... I'm not going to do a Dobby impression, but Harry realizes that Umbridge has found out about the DA, and he's like, everybody run, and they all run, and then Harry's almost going to get away, and then Draco grabs him and hauls him to Umbridge.
Yeah. So when he gets to Umbridge's office, which is full of cat plates, if you'll recall.
Meow. Meow. Cat plates that Maggie doesn't like. See, she...
She didn't like that because it sounded like the cat was drowning.
She did not like that. Her ears went back, but knows how she's still ignoring you.
Yeah, well, that's...
She's a cat.
Cat.
Yeah.
She's
a small, medium, large cat. Sorry.
It's less than human.
It's less than human.
Take a drink, those of you playing along. Have a swig of eggnog.
Woo! Happy Christmas.
Happy Christmas, Ron.
Happy Christmas, Terry. Okay.
I'm all healed. My name's Hermione. I'm adorable in the first movie.
With my bushy
and
hair.
All of them. But anyway, so Harry gets hauled off to Umbridge's office by Malfoy, the little
twerp.
Yeah, that's exactly the word I was thinking of. That's really weird.
That is really weird.
I was, wow.
Okay. Mind meld to Azkaban.
Exactly.
What's a bad
mind meld noise?
Okay.
Sorry, I'm off.
Our minds did not meld on that
one. No, not on that sound. Okay, so he gets hauled off to Umbridge's office along with, like, he finds Crabbe and Goyle and Pansy freaking Parkinson.
She's frustrating.
And, wait, are they in Umbridge's office or are they in Dumbledore's office for this one?
I don't remember. Also, okay. I don't think we covered Dumbledore leaving.
Well, that's what we're getting to.
Okay, I didn't remember
because
when that happens.
They raid the Room of Requirement. They skip this in the... How do they do it in the movie? Now I'm confused.
I'm trying to remember the sequence of events.
Yeah. Dumbledore first.
Dumbledore before catching?
No, because they have to break into the Room of Requirement.
They get the list.
Okay, so anyway, they're in an office.
I think it's Umbridge's.
I was going to say, I think it's Dumbledore's. That's really interesting. All right, well, whatever. Yeah, it's in Dumbledore's because he uses Foxtrot's cape.
Oh.
Wait, how are we messing this up?
But I'm... So, I know what you're... Like, I know that portion.
Yeah.
Like, don't get me wrong, you're totally right on that.
I know I am.
Thank you for that. I was just thinking that, like, which I could very possibly be wrong.
Right.
But
that's rare.
Do they... Like, I thought, for some reason, they, like, start in Umbridge's office, and then I don't remember if she's like... Like, I feel like there's a step before going to Dumbledore.
Maybe.
But I could be wrong.
Because, like, they know to go in the Room of Requirement because of Marietta.
Right.
Which is
so
in the movie.
Right.
Okay, whatever. They're in an office. Let's just
move on.
They're
in an office.
They're in an office.
Yeah.
It's Umbridge's.
It's Dumbridge's.
Dumbridge's office.
Umbledore's.
We're Umbledore's army. We just internally fight. So they're in an office, and basically, like, half the DA's in there. It's Harry, Ron, Hermione, obviously. Neville and Luna.
Ginny,
because Ginny's a badass.
Mm-hmm. Are the twins in there?
I'm going to go with a no.
Okay. I'll stay behind
them. Wait, did we completely skip Owls and the twins leaving?
I thought that was after this.
Is that after this?
I think so. Yeah.
Do they still take their owls after the Dark Lord returns?
No, because... Well, yeah, they're going to take their standardized testing. We don't stop standardized testing for anything. But I believe Umbridge is in charge when the owl thing happens. I don't think Dumbledore's there anymore. I think that happens, like, right after Dumbledore leaves.
Oh! Okay.
Because I think...
Okay, now I'm on board.
Okay.
There are two separate events that I was conflating. I am so sorry, our dear listeners. This is my fault. My fault.
We're both, like, tired and a little off tonight, so
yeah,
I feel like
just
people are
rough.
Just gonna need to...
Just
bear with us on this
one. Have a little faith.
Have
a little grace.
And maybe a drink or two.
Have a little grace. Got to have the grace.
I don't know what you're singing.
I don't know what I'm singing
okay.
either.
Oh, I thought
I think
you,
I just
okay.
conflated two songs. I am out of it.
By the way, the other day, I was helping Robert's child fall asleep.
Aww.
And I was holding her and, like, you know, like, rocking her or whatever, and I was humming songs. And I decided, I was like, I'm gonna make up a song. Like, you know, because that'd be fun. And, like, so I just started humming random notes. And then, like, she fell asleep and I put her in her crib. And that's when I realized I was humming, In the Cross. Like, that old hymn. And I was like...
In the old Rugged Cross?
Yeah! And then I was like, that's a really weird, like...
That's soothing.
And I was like, it's a nice melody, but yeah. I was like, sorry for pulling out hymns on you.
I wonder if there's a rewritten, what's the meter to that so we could put new words to it?
I don't know.
Gonna have to
We're going to have to look that up. That'll be a side project.
Okay.
Rewriting that hymn.
I bet someone's already done it.
Probably.
Because Old Rugged, I mean, like, I think somebody's probably rewritten.
I wonder if it's public domain yet.
I don't know. But you can still re- Oh. Yeah. I mean, because you can rewrite text to tunes, and you can just, like, put the text up and say, like, here's the text to the tune
That's
the Old Rugged Cross.
Yeah.
You just can't print it with the tune if the tune is still under copyright.
Right.
Like, I could write words and be like, this is to Marty Haugen's Joyous Light of Heavenly Glory. And then you could, except for why would you rewrite the words to that?
Right, that makes no sense.
No, but I'm just saying, and I don't think he could be like, hey.
Yeah. I think as long as you print, like, the music with, like, this is Marty Haugen's.
Yep, exactly.
But here are my words.
Yep, and I think if you just said the words and just said to the tune of, then he'd be like, well, nothing we can do. Except point out that you have terrible choice in Tim tunes to change, because why would you mess with Joyous Light? Because it's amazing.
Right.
Moving on.
I'm glad that we covered copyright in this podcast.
I think that was important.
It was.
We're, you know, 18 sessions into this podcast. We want to make sure that we're doing this legally. Okay. So, haul people off to Dumbledore. This one happens in Dumbledore's office.
Okay.
Because, and I remember why now. This one happens in Dumbledore's office. So, they've hauled everybody in there, and, like, Dumbledore's in there, Kingsley's in there, the Minister for Magic, mm-hmm. Cornelius Fudge shows up, Percy Weasley, frickin' Percy Weasley.
Yep.
Being another twerp.
Being a Slytherin.
I'm not gonna disagree with you anymore, because honestly, he's terrible in this movie.
Yeah.
Book.
Wow.
I hate myself.
Abby, I love you.
Thanks, Carrie.
We'll get it together.
We can do this. Okay. And they're basically like, hey, look, we, you know, like, oh, and Marietta's there, and she's covered her face with her sweater.
I was wondering if you were going to come.
And when she pulls her sweater, this is, we missed this in the movie, and it's so sad, because it's the best. So when she pulls her sweater down a little bit, you can see that in bright purple spots, like acne, across her face is the word sneak. And Harry's like, Hermione is so awesome, but kind of terrifying. Like, yes. This is what she didn't tell anybody, that, like, if you sign your name on this parchment that says, like, you won't tell anybody about Dumbledore's army, but then you break the promise, you will be covered in purple acne. You'll be
facially disfigured for a little bit.
For the foreseeable future.
Right.
I mean, Madame Pomfrey takes care of it, but it's still a pretty badass curse. Like, dang, Hermione.
And, like, the fact that Hermione can do that is just,
As a fifth year?
Right. Yeah.
But, I mean, none of us are surprised.
Right, because it's Hermione Granger.
We're just a little, for someone who goes into magical law, I feel like that's one of those things you need to share with people. Like, by putting your name on this, this is what you're consenting to?
Yeah.
Maybe there's different rules for consent in the magical world.
I'm thinking, too, that there's probably different rules, like, for a, you know, group of students that are underage.
Sure.
As opposed to, like, a mortgage contract.
If you break this contract,
if you break
all of your limbs will break. You will turn to bone jelly.
You would never have a late payment.
No, that's all I'm saying. That's true. You would have no, I think the great thing about this is you would have no organized crime.
It's true.
Like, for profit. Like, if you think about it, there is no crime for profit in the wizarding world. No, that's not true. Mundungus Fletcher sells stolen stuff. Okay. I was hopeful for a while that perhaps that we would have imagined a utopian society with the introduction of magic. But no. Evil just replicates itself in new and different ways. Similarly used to Sepulchator.
This is a really cheery podcast.
Happy finals week! Alright, fine. So we're going to close our office. And Marietta has told on them.
Okay. So then, they got into the Room of Requirement, like Umbridge's people did, High Inquisitorial Squad or whatever. The Inquisitorial Squad.
Ugh.
Which is, like, Malfoy and, like, all Slytherins.
Yeah.
So,
again, if you partner up with the Slytherins in order to accomplish things, you've got to rethink what you're doing.
Right. So they bring in this, and they have the list of all the members, and it says Dumbledore's Army at the top, because that's what they nicknamed themselves, or Ginny suggested they call themselves, whatever. And so Umbridge is like, it's as we feared, Minister, and we learn that Cornelius Fudge, the Minister of Magic, has been super paranoid that Dumbledore has been building an army against him.
Right.
Because Fudge is crazy, and...
Also, because if you're going to build an army, why not build it out of underage teenagers?
Right. That totally makes sense.
Strong.
Fudge has also always thought that Dumbledore wanted his job. Mm-hmm. And when Fudge got his job, a lot of people wanted Dumbledore to take it. Mm-hmm. And Dumbledore's like, nope, I want to be headmaster of Hogwarts. I'm cool with this. Yep. And so Fudge has always been kind of like, meh, he wants my job. And now it's like, yeah, he's raising an army against me and he's going to take my job and meh.
Yep.
So, yeah. And so now it seems like there's proof that he's building this army.
Right.
And I believe Harry jumps in and is like, nope. Like, nah. And Dumbledore's like, no. Don't cover for me. Like.
I think what Dumbledore does is, like, very subtly nod.
Yeah.
Like, and I think, and what happens is basically it's like, all right, we're here to investigate this group that's meeting. Like, this is an illegal student group.
Yep.
And, you know, you started, you know, you had this planning meeting in October, and Harry's like, and he sees Dumbledore nod, and he's like, yep, we did.
Yep, we did.
And oh, that's Umbridge right. is like, ha, bah, 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 illegal, not permitted. And Dumbledore's like, well, if you'll recall, you know, Dolores, you had not yet outlawed them. And, you know, this group met before that decree came through. She's like, well, but we were here to hear about 6 months of meetings. And at this moment, you hear that, like, Harry feels this whoosh. And he's like, what was that? And he looks at Merit and then, like, is not sure what's going on. But, like, Kingsley's kind of, like, adjusting his, like, shaking out his sleeves and, like, trying to get comfortable. And Harry's like, I don't know what just happened. So they look at Marietta. And they're like, and so Dolores is like, tell them about all the meetings that you told me about. And Marietta's like, nope. And just shakes her head. And Umbridge, like, starts shaking her physically and is like, no, you told me there were multiple meetings and 6 months of them and blah! And Marietta's just like, nope. And basically, like, keeps shaking or nodding her head only in answers to questions. And Harry's like, cool, what?
Like, if you told on us,
yeah, why are Umbridge, you suddenly,
why are you
like,
suddenly so tight-lipped in this situation?
Yeah. And so, basically, I think McGonagall forces Umbridge to stop manhandling Marietta. And, basically, yeah, they established that...
Yeah, and so Dumbledore's...
The first meeting was tonight. This was, like, they had a
right.
organizational meeting in October before the ban, and then now they had a first meeting tonight, but it was Dumbledore who instigated it.
Right.
And Dumbledore is like, yep, it was me. Mwah-ha-ha-ha-ha!
Yeah. So then the minister, right, basically says, like...
We're taking you to Azkaban.
We're taking you to Azkaban, then. Which seems like a really harsh punishment.
Yeah. You'd think there'd be, like, a little trial before you take people off to... I mean, maybe, I guess.
Although with Fudge, he's already paranoid at this point, so he's just gone insane.
Right.
And I think, doesn't Fudge tell Shacklebolt Kingsley to, like, take him or whatever?
Yeah, exactly.
And then...
And Kingsley's like, okay. Right.
And then, I don't know if it's in the book, but it's, like, when, like, in the movie I thoroughly enjoy when he's, like,
It is in the book.
Okay, cool. So, Dumbledore says,
That was an Azkaban. That was a mind meld, but yes.
Cool. So, Dumbledore says something about, like, oh, Minister, I think you're under the impression that I would, to borrow a phrase, come quietly. And then he says, no.
Nah.
That's not gonna happen.
Nah.
Not gonna happen. And so, is it the same as in the movie? Does Fox fly over...
I think there's actually, everybody reacts, like, McGonagall and all of the other teachers, like, good teachers who are in the room.
Uh-huh.
Actually stun everyone who's in the room. Like, they stun Cornelius, they stun Dolores, they stun, like,
there's one thought, like, there's more
guy from the ministry, they stun Percy, like, there's just, like, massive room ruckus. And then Dumbledore's like, good, good, excellent, well done, everyone.
Thank you.
And then I think he disappears.
Yep. Because you can't apparate or disapparate in Hogwarts.
Right. Unless you're Dumbledore.
Yeah, but even...
Yeah, I don't think he doesn't. I think he just, like, goes the, out the, he just walks out the door, like, in bye!
In the movies, there's, like, this part in the sixth book, in the sixth movie, sorry, where they apparate outside of Hogwarts, and Harry's right. like, but you can't do that, and Dumbledore's like, well, being me, I have privileges, but that never happens in the book.
Right, that's very true. Yeah, I think he just walks out the door.
Yeah, I think he just walks out. Kind of boss-like. In my opinion.
Like, I think they obliviate some of the memories and basically, like, oh, I think I think Kingsley actually does get stunned to sort of, like, make it look yeah. like he was not complicit. And so, basically, like, they all start waking up and they're like, ah, Dumbledore's gone! And it's like, oh my gosh, he got away! Bye! I don't know how! And, but Shacklebolt does say, in both the book and the movie, whether or not you approve of his methods, Minister, you've got to admit,
Dumbledore's got style. I love great. Kingsley, just for that.
Yeah, one of the best lines. And so then it's like, okay, and so Dolores Umbridge becomes headmistress of Hogwarts.
Yeah.
Ugh.
So that happens. Also, I don't know when this happens, or when we find this out. Are we going to explain Marietta now or later?
What do we need to explain?
Why?
Why she did it?
Yeah.
Because of her mom?
Well...
Is she getting truth serumed? I feel like that's yeah. the movie.
Yeah, so... No, I
thought... Oh, okay. Okay, you do it. You do it.
Okay, so... I believe...
I trust you.
Because I think there's some part in the book that I remember reading where it's like, okay, people are... Like, before they were caught, people were getting questioned about...
I know societies. Harry was.
I know yeah. Harry was. And I think others were, too.
Okay.
And they would be brought... Maybe this is where I was getting Umbridge's office, because they're brought into her office,
okay.
I believe.
Okay, yeah.
And they're right. And she's, like, questioning them, and she always offers them tea.
Mm-hmm.
And Harry makes sure to make it look like he's drinking tea, but he clamps his lip down, like, as hard as he can against the glass and doesn't let any of the liquid in.
Yep.
So and he's not actually drinking. Dumps something
into a, like, pot nearby.
Yeah, he's, like, dumping a little bit. And yeah, into a potted plant to make it look like he's drinking the tea based on. And he...
I think he fails to instruct the rest of the DA to do such a thing.
Right, but I think the rest of the DA kind of figures it out, like, yeah. on their own. Which except for Marietta.
Right.
Because she just straight up drinks the tea, and then she has... And there's truth serum in there, so she has to tell the truth, so yeah.
And Harry remembers not to drink it because of what Mad-Eye Moody, I mean, Barty Crouch Jr. being Mad-Eye Moody, told him, which was never drink... From, like, never drink something that your enemy offers you, right. basically. And he's like, all right.
Constant vigilance!
Constant vigilance, Potter! and so that's why he doesn't drink it.
Yeah. But so yeah. He feels so that's also why Marietta would yeah. not tell about the meetings when they're in Dumbledore's office, but she did before because she had truth serum.
Well, and what happens in Dumbledore's office is Kingsley hits her with an Obliviate.
Oh, yeah, that too.
And he modifies her memory. So she only remembers meeting in October to plan and then meeting that night. She
right.
doesn't remember any of the meetings in between.
So much sneakiness going on in that one meeting.
I know.
There was some major mind melding happening there.
It's true. So.
So.
Owls? Yeah, I mean, they're allowed to still take their owls, despite the fact that they, you know, formed... I think it's this sort of like, oh, you were deceived by Dumbledore. Although I think they get watched pretty heavily after that.
Yeah.
But, like, they're still allowed to stay in school and take their owls, which you'd think she'd probably be like, expel all of them!
Right!
Will that ruin your careers for the rest of your life? Don't care! I hate everyone who's happy!
But then they'd be rogue.
That's true. You gotta keep them in line.
You gotta watch them.
Yeah. So they keep them in for their owls, and they take their owls. All of the DA perform extremely well on their Defense Against the Dark Arts owls.
Yes. And one of my favorite parts of the whole book...
Yes, do this one. Do this one. Yes.
Okay,
of course the hair one. We're mind melding.
Sorry.
We're back on track.
So they're doing the Defense Against the Dark Arts owl, and all of, and like Harry's kind of glancing around at all the DA members, mm-hmm. and they're doing really well, and he's like super proud and excited. So he gets to his test, and he does all, like, the normal things or whatever.
Yep.
And then, the like, the instructor or like the...
If I recall correctly, it's someone who knows Madam Bones.
Yes.
Amelia Bones, I should say.
It's someone related to Susan and Amelia Bones. Mm-hmm. he's like grading the test or whatever.
Yeah.
And so Harry performs all of his like amazingly well because he's Harry freaking Potter. And then the Mr. Bones.
Yeah, I don't know who it is.
Yeah.
But somehow he's heard about this.
Or like Harry just walks to him or something and then he says, is it like, can you really produce a Patronus? And Harry's like, yep. And he's like a full fledged like
corporeal
Patronus, and Harry's like, yeah. And he's like, can I see it? And Harry's like, all right.
I think he says it's not part of the test, but maybe for an extra point.
Yeah, but maybe for an extra point. And Harry's like, okay, and then, like, produces his stag.
He looks across the room, and he can see Umbridge, like, watching all of them and glaring at the DA members that, like, they're doing so well, and he imagines her getting sacked, and that's his happy memory.
Makeup Patronus.
Yep.
Glorious.
The stag canters around the hall. And everybody's like, oh, we're pretty.
Someone has a pretty Patronus.
It's Harry Potter. He's so great.
He's so dreamy. I don't know.
Yep, yeah, I think that happens.
Yeah. So, and then, is it during an owl examination?
It is. It is during,
is it History of Magic?
I believe so. Okay. Let's go with History of Magic.
So they're taking a bunch of these tests. Like, there's the Defense Against Dark Arts one, there's, like, a Transfiguration one, there's, like, a Potions one, which I think they all are, like, tweaking out
abysmal
about.
Except for Hermione.
Right. Hermione probably rocks it, but... I don't remember what they do for that, but during...
They have to make a potion.
Well, yeah, but... but during the History of Magic test exam, all of the 55th years are, like, writing down all they know about the Goblin Wars or whatever. Right. And they start hearing noises.
Like explosion noises.
Like explosion noises, and they're like,
Hey.
I think there's something going on. And they keep getting louder or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then at some point, it like...
They're just like, all right, let's... They're like... I don't know.
I don't remember if like they break in or if like the students are like, let's figure this out or whatever. But somehow, they recognize that Fred and George Weasley are just causing a ruck in the school.
A ruckus?
Causing a ruckus is what I wanted.
Causing
a muck doesn't really make any sense.
Causing a muckus.
I think I got confused because I thought of their swamp.
Ah, yes. We will get to
which
that.
Which is filled with muck, I would imagine.
Yes.
I think that's where my brain went. Anyway,
They're causing a muckus.
So, Fred and George, I think they were setting off fireworks in the halls.
I don't remember if they're doing anything else.
I think that's pretty much it.
They create a swamp that you can't get across.
They create a swamp that you can't get across. That's, like, in kind of a major hallway, too.
Yeah, exactly.
No one can really figure out how to get rid of it, except for the teachers might know how to get rid of it.
One of the charms.
It's annoying Umbridge, so they're like, I don't know how to get rid of that.
It's very difficult.
I teach charms. No clue what they used.
Nope.
And then there's this awesome line in the book, too, where, like, professors, I think that they point out McGonagall, but maybe not. Professors are, like, allowing students to be a little late if they had to, like, get around the swamp. Like, they're like, it's fine. So basically Fred and George, they set off fireworks, they cause this huge swamp in the middle of a hallway. I feel like there's something else that they do, but I can't remember.
As they're flying out on their broomsticks, they break out their broomsticks from Umbridge's office. Break them out through the, like, they do Accio broomstick and it breaks out through the brick wall.
Which, by the way, she had their broomsticks. I don't know if you covered that.
Yeah, she had their broomsticks chained up, you know, because they couldn't play
all of the Gryffindors.
And so then they break them out, and as they're flying away with their trunks tied on, like, they're like, we're gonna go be awesome now! We're opening a magic shop, y'all should come, it's gonna be down in,
Diagon Alley.
Yep.
We're opening a joke shop in Diagon Alley, you guys should come.
Peeves. give her hell for us. Yes! And Peeves is like, yes! And I think it's like the first time that Peeves has ever obeyed an order from a student.
Yes. Which I love that Peeves and the Weasley twins kind of have friendship going on.
Pranksters together.
Which you totally miss in the movies because the ghosts disappear.
Yeah, the ghosts are sort of just not really
around.
Yeah, they're once and then it's bye.
Yeah. So the Weasley twins are, like, they leave school, but they'd obviously also be expelled.
Yeah.
And they go start a joke shop, which is kind of awesome.
Weasley's Wizarding Weezes.
Yeah.
It's stuck.
It's okay. It's a ridiculous tongue twister.
It's meant to be.
Right. So that happens. Mm-hmm. And then I don't remember when Harry gets the vision, so you're going to have to help me out.
I actually think it's during... Okay, so we said that this happened during the History of Magic test, but I think that's wrong because I think it's in Professor Binns' classroom that he gets the pain in his head.
Oh.
So I don't know which one it is.
Okay.
Let's, I don't...
Is it during an owl examination that he said
I thought it was. Oh, but maybe
I think it is.
Because I think he's just like, well, I'm going to fail that.
Right.
Whatever. And, but he gets this, whatever. He's in a thing. And,
he's in a test.
And he just gets this splitting pain in his scar. And runs out, like, eventually escapes out into the hallway.
Yeah, I think he, like, just scribbles down some answers, turns in his test, and, like, runs out in the hallway.
And, like, he collapses with this vision. It's the hallway that he's been trying to get to in all of his dreams, in which he now knows, because he's been able to piece it together, is in the Department of Mysteries.
In the Ministry of Magic.
Right. Underground London. And he sees Voldemort torturing Sirius.
Yeah.
And he's just like, fuck this! We gotta go.
Yeah.
And Hermione's like, Harry, we can't just go.
We can't just, like, go to
London.
Like,
we can't just go to London. I'm sure, like, Voldemort could be messing with your head. And he's like, my godfather! Only family I have left! Ah, emotion!
And Hermione's like, okay, but, like, Voldemort could be messing with your head, so let's just check.
Yep, let's check
on him. And see if Sirius is okay.
We gotta do the
we have to check
fireplace
first.
Thing.
We're gonna, like, yeah, we're gonna...
What's that called?
I don't remember. But they use flu powder for it, but you just stick your face in the flames. You don't actually jump in the fireplace.
That's exactly, because it's the flu network.
It's using the flu network, but you just stick your face in the flames and then your head pops up in the fire.
Yeah.
So
it's like, but Umbridge is watching all of the flu network. And all it's like, not all of them.
Not all of them are being watched.
So they set off a whole bunch of wizard wheezes. Fireworks, I think.
Yeah. And then I think Hermione contacts the DA with their galleons.
I think what happened...
And is like... Or was that after? I don't remember.
I think it's after.
Okay.
Because I think first what happens is they break into Umbridge's office,
mm-hmm.
and they use her fireplace to connect to Sirius's place.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks. And, so, what happens is,
So they set up, but they have lookouts. Like, they have Ginny and Neville or someone.
I think that's right. Because Ginny's just awesome and Neville's just with them.
Right.
Yeah.
So they decide to break into Umbridge's office to use this flu network, which is kind of crazy, to get to Grimmauld Place and check and see if Sirius is there.
Yep.
So...
No, you're right. Hermione alerts the DA first, and that's why Neville and Luna and Ginny are there. You're right.
So Neville, Luna, and Ginny are going to watch out for Umbridge.
Mm-hmm.
Harry, Ron, and Hermione sneak into her office. Harry uses the flu powder, gets to Grimmauld Place, and sees Creature.
Yep.
And says, like, is Sirius there? And Creature says no.
Right.
Master is gone or
Master's
something.
Master's gone out. I don't know where Master is.
Yeah.
Master hasn't been back for a long time.
Right. And so Harry's like, no!
Right. Clearly being tortured by Voldemort.
Clearly being tortured by Voldemort.
Only, like, there's at home or there's tortured by Voldemort.
Right. There's no
other option.
There's no he ran to Target or...
Wizarding Target? What would the Wizarding Target be?
I don't know. He's probably just at Madame Malkin's.
Yeah, there you go.
So...
Picking up some robes.
Right. But for Harry, there's none of that logical thinking. No. It's just like, nah! Which I can understand.
It's all pathos with Harry. It's just all pathos.
All pathos all the time. Which I can understand, because if you get such a vivid, like, you know, picture of someone you love so much getting tortured, I'm sure, like, I would be like, we're saving that person. Like,
yeah, we gotta save him. And then...
So, the issue is that...
Umbridge catches them
in her office. I think Ginny, like, tries to warn them, but, like, can't. I don't know.
Yeah, Ginny tries to warn them, and Neville and Luna are kind of useless.
Yeah. So Umbridge catches them, and, she's like, who are you trying to contact? And Harry's like, no one. And
she's like, Dumbledore, you know where he is.
You know where he is. And Harry's like, no, meh. And then, does she call for Snape?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, she calls for Snape. And she's like, give me some more of your Veritas serum, the truth. Telling stuff. Yeah. And Snape's like, you used up all my stores. Oh, this is where they find out. She says, you used up all my stores interviewing all the DA kids.
Yep.
And she's like, damn it.
And then, and see, in the movie, it's attributed to Cho. And so this is the moment when it's like, oh.
Cho's okay.
But instead it's still like, well, it was Marietta. And there's still kind of this tension between Harry and Cho after that where it's like, your friend still told on us. And it's like, it was Veritas serum. And it's like, yeah, I'm still not into you.
Yeah, and Harry's like, yeah, I'm over you now, though.
Yeah.
Which is kind of convenient, but...
Right, exactly. plot device!
Yeah. So Harry's crush on Cho ends, because there's that weird animosity.
It was also,
you know?
Kind of... I mean, like, they have nothing to talk about. Like, yeah, they just... True. Like, they get... Like, it's basically they can talk about Quidditch, and that's kind of their only thing. Which, I realize that they're, like, 14, but...
But still.
I had friends when I was 14 that I could talk about more than Quidditch with.
Right. Same here.
I didn't know the Quidditch existed yet. But still.
I did.
Alright, fine. Fine.
You're and I did talk about Quidditch with my 14-year-old friends.
Your youth has finally superseded my wisdom.
But we talked about other stuff too, not just Quidditch.
Right.
Yeah, so, yeah.
Such a terrible, awkward date that goes so badly. Did we cover that?
We did it!
We skipped. They went on a terrible, awkward date on Valentine's Day. It was the worst!
Oh my gosh! On Valentine's Day, they go to Hogsmeade. And the reason I love it is because there's a band called Harry and the Potters. And they have a song called The Human Hosepipe that is just the greatest thing. But it's all about that awkward date. And basically what happens is they go to this, like, coffee shop. This tea shop.
Yeah, tea shop.
And, like, on a date. And Cho starts talking about Cedric.
Yeah.
And then she starts, like, crying. Yeah. And Harry's like, this is the weirdest thing ever. And, yeah.
Not hot.
That, yeah. So that whole scene happened.
Yep. And then she gets mad at him because he's made plans to meet up with Hermione. Or, like, Hermione said to him, hey, can you meet up with me later? Because I have some things to talk to you about. I think it was about DA stuff. Or
probably.
Something else. And he was like, yeah, sure. And so he's like, oh, hey, we're meeting up with Hermione later. And Cho's like, we're meeting up with Hermione? How many other girls have you decided to meet up with? And he's like, what?
He's like, whoa.
And then Hermione laughs at him and was like, you should have told her, like, oh, I really hate to do this, but I have to meet with Hermione. Can you come with me?
Is there any
and I think
way?
She's so ugly. And he's like, I don't think you're ugly. And
Hermione's like, Ron Cho, you do.
She's like, you just got to learn how to work with women. And he's like, ugh. And I think Ron says, you should write a book about the daft things girls do. So boys can understand them. And Hermione's just like, oh.
Yeah. So there's been tension between Harry and Cho and...
Yeah. Their date didn't go well.
Right. So, back in Umbridge's office. Okay. So, Snape's like, I don't have any...
Severus Snape.
He's like, I don't have any more truth serum. Umbridge is like, you're useless. And Snape is like, all right, catch you later. And Harry's like, okay, this is my opportunity. Like, someone else needs to know. Like, I can't tell Dumbledore that Sirius is in trouble.
Because I know where he is.
Right. Snape is in the Order of the Phoenix. Right. So, like, it's a long shot, but maybe, you know.
Right.
Like, but I need to tell an adult.
Right.
Which, kudos to Harry, because he has never had this thought before.
He has always been... He decides, I need to tell an adult, and I need to overcome my hatred for Snape. Like,
right.
This is amazing personal growth that he displays for about a minute.
Right. Like, way to go, 15-year-old Harry, for, although, like, slight growth.
To be fair, he displays a huge personal growth and then gets completely destroyed.
Yeah.
So
Snape is about to leave, and Harry yells out, he's like, he's got Padfoot.
Mm-hmm.
And Snape's like, and Harry's like, he's got Padfoot in the place that it's hidden.
Mm-hmm.
And, Umbridge is like,
who's Padfoot?
Who's Padfoot? What's going on? And Snape very coolly turns to her and says, I have no idea what he's talking about. And then, like,
it's probably glares the crab at Harry. Is, like, choking him and he's losing oxygen.
Right. Oh, yeah, because they're, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, and then, like, glares at Harry or something. Like, he's like, whatever, and walks away.
Mm-hmm.
And so Harry's like, shit! Like, he's like, yeah. I had my one opportunity to tell an adult to get this done, and, like, I'm about to die because Crab's holding me by my throat, and Sirius is gonna die, and this sucks.
Mm-hmm.
And then Hermione, would you like to take over?
Mm-mm.
Okay, so Hermione yells out,
you know, Hermione's the best!
Right, so Hermione says, just tell her, Harry, and by the way, we totally did not cover this, did we?
Oh, shoot, we totally didn't cover this.
Terrence not even back in our podcast.
By the way, Hagrid's back. He and Madame Maxine went as envoys on behalf of the Order of the Phoenix to the giant clans living in Scotland, I don't know. Tried to convince them to come over to their side. For a while, looked like they were making headway, then there was a bloody coup, because giants are violent, and basically the giants are all on Dumbledore's, or on Voldemort's side.
Yeah.
But, Hagrid brought back with him a special friend.
A special friend named
In the form
Grawp.
Of his half-brother, full giant, Grawp.
Grawp. G-R-A-W-P.
Yes. Who Hagrid is keeping hidden in the Forbidden Forest so he can take care of him and, like, try to socialize him.
Yes. And then asks Harry, Ron, and Hermione to help him.
Yeah, and to look
with
after
this,
him.
And to look after him, especially if Hagrid gets sacked. Are we good with that?
Yep, that's okay. Good. That's a good cover.
Okay, now we're back.
How did J.K. Rowling write all this?
I have no idea. I'm going to promise right now over break to reread 6 and 7 before we make those podcasts so that, yeah.
But even I listened to book 5 up through about where we are, and I forgot about Grawp.
Yeah.
It's just, there's so many parts.
There's so
just
many, and, like, the thing is that they're rather disjointed.
Exactly what I was just thinking.
Like, it all flows together in a story, don't get me wrong. Like, I'm not like, meh, when I'm reading it.
No.
But in remembering it, like, I'm like, where does this fit in, and where is this piece, and
right, and then you get to the end, and you're like, ah!
Here's 15 things we forgot.
Yep.
Okay, so, we're back in Umbridge's office. Snape has just left, being a jerk, as always, totally and Harry's jerk. Like, everyone's gonna die, and Hermione's like, just tell her where it is. And Harry's like,
tell her what?
Tell her what?
Who?
And then she says, the secret weapon. And Umbridge is like, a weapon? Like, what weapon do you have? Yeah. And Hermione's like, well, it's in the Forbidden Forest, but Dumbledore told us not to tell you, but...
But we wanted to tell him that it's almost ready, but we don't know where he is, so we've just been trying the flu networks. We've been looking in the leaky cauldron. And Umbridge is like, you foolish girl! And it's like, that should have been your first clue.
Yeah. First of all, Hermione Granger said something dumb, so let's take a second there.
Let's just think this over.
But Umbridge doesn't think about that, so she's like, well, show me where this weapon is.
Yeah, exactly.
Hermione's like, alright. So her and Harry and Umbridge go tromping into the woods. I don't think anyone else does.
No, because I think Malfoy says, like, Professor, do you want me to go with, or Headmistress, do you want me to go with you? And she says, I think I can handle 2 unarmed, underage visits on my own. And it's like, lady, Harry beat Voldemort unarmed when he was a baby.
So, and Hermione's wicked smart.
Hermione's way too smart for her own good. But Umbridge has never recognized this. Hermione's just an upstart who's always like, but I want to actually practice what we're doing instead of just reading it in books. Which is suddenly feeling very applicable to me on the campus of this seminary.
Really? You wouldn't say.
Just a tad.
Actually, I do have to say,
I think we're doing better.
I think we're doing better.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, some of my finals have been, like, how are you going to use this in your actual ministry? And I'm like,
I think what we failed to do well, and I feel like I'm seeing this now, is that it's sort of like, what are you going to do in your ministry, rather than forcing us to consider it in a contextual way that would actually be difficult, in a sort of like, like when we do case studies, you know, and stuff. Like, we'll do that in preaching class, or I don't know what you do now in preaching class, but, like, what we used to do in preaching and pastoral care was, like, we'd have case studies, and they'd be difficult. Your case study would be like, all right, a grandmother has come to you and said she wants you to baptize her grandchildren in secret. The parents are not churched, but she wants the children to be saved. And it's like, what do you do?
Snap!
Yeah, right? And then we'd go off in groups and talk about it, and then we'd come back together as a, I'm pretty sure this was preaching class, and be like, okay, how would you speak into this?
We did some worship. Of those in worship. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Preaching was, but we don't need to talk about that.
I think it's wise.
Yeah.
Hi, Megs.
Mind meld. What's with the one paw extended? That looks uncomfortable.
I think that actually, like, that's actually how cats achieve maximum comfort, is the one paw extended. Like, I've seen a picture of cats achieving comfort, like a cartoon, and it's like, when the one paw is extended, that's maximum comfort. I don't know.
It just seems like that's, like, it's gonna fall asleep or something.
Yeah, you'd think.
You know, like, get all tingly.
Well, sleeping on it isn't gonna help either.
Yeah, that's true.
It's gonna make it all tingly. So.
So anyway, my cat's sleeping right now.
But I think, yeah, Mags is adorable. But I think, because that's one of the things I've been noticing in the call process is, like, we've been really good at asking people, what do you want to do? And, like, helping us cultivate that, rather than, like, what are you willing to do? In, like, very specific, contextual, difficult situations.
Right.
And it wouldn't be that hard to find them. Like, you could just be on the ELCA Clergy Facebook page and pull six case studies from that. Because people post about stuff all the time where it's, like, this is what's going on in my salary negotiations. This is what's going on with, like, a toxic council president. This is what's going on with, like, a bully in the church. And you can just pull from that.
Yeah.
And, like,
because that's the stuff that only really comes with experience, which I think is why we don't tackle it. But the thing is that if we can get together and talk about it, then, like, we won't have that experience, but we'll at least have some practice in thinking about it, instead of just being surprised by it once you enter ministry.
Exactly. And just thinking, like, well, I never wanted to do this. Well, no, you didn't.
Well, no, you didn't.
But oddly enough,
but
as I am learning, and anybody who's listening to this podcast who knows me personally is laughing right now, Courtney, she won't have made it 47 minutes in. but as anyone who knows me personally, you don't just get to do what you want.
Right.
Or, as one might say, you can't always get what you want.
Okay, family story.
Good. Also, mind meld. Well done.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks for that
part. I mean, thank you. Like, you know. Yeah. That wasn't like a cocky, like, thanks, I'm awesome. It was like a, thank you for mind melding. So, family story. My dad loves that song.
Good.
like, whatever. So, you know, like, when you're a little kid and you, like, want something in the store and you, like, ask your parents or whatever, and they're like, no. My dad, instead of saying no, would say there's a song about that, referencing You Can't Always Get What You Want by the Rolling Stones.
That's amazing.
And for some reason, like, me and my brothers, whenever we, like, heard that, like, it was immediately like, well, that's not gonna happen. Like, for some reason, that was, like, that was the end of the conversation. Was like, well, there's a song about that, and you're like, damn it, he's right. Like, I don't know. But anyway.
I like that.
It's, like, one of my favorite, it was, like, one of my favorite pairs.
I kind of want to carry around, like, I want to pick up a bunch of cheap stuff at the dollar store or, like, at Party City and just carry around in my pocket for kids right now this time of year because they want everything. Like, we've got, first of all, to any parents listening, if at any point you say to your child, you don't want that book, I will hit you.
What?
Yeah. You don't want that book. I've heard that, like, for no good reason. Like, it hasn't even been like, oh, it's Harry Potter and it's witchcraft. Like, no, you don't want that book. And I'm like, but the kid thinks they want it, okay?
It's a book!
Get a gift receipt. If they haven't read it in 2 weeks, bring it back.
Yeah.
You know, like, okay, you think that they just want it because it has a pretty cover or whatever, but, like, give the kid a chance! Right? I think, and sometimes it's like, oh, you just want that because it's there and you're not actually going to read it. And I'm like, that's what credit cards are for. Put it on a credit card. If the kid doesn't read it, you bring it back.
Right.
Our return policy is pretty decent for, you know, a bookstore that people treat as a library periodically. That's why bookstore. That's why Barnes & Noble has a really strict return. Like, it has to be within 2 weeks, generally. Mm-hmm. Gift receipt extends it, but it has to be within 2 weeks because people treat it as, like, a library. Like, they check out a book, they read it, and then they bring it back and get refunded.
Right.
And I'm like,
yeah, that's not cool.
So, don't do that. And if your child wants a book, you should buy it for them.
I read this thing on Tumblr today. That was this person was like, if you buy a book that has been made into a movie, mm-hmm. with the movie character, like, with the actors and actresses on it, mm-hmm. I swear, I will hunt you down and give you a huge hug because you're actually reading the book and that's all that matters. Forget those book elitists. And I was like, that is not where I thought that sentence was going. And that was amazing.
That's amazing.
Which is coming from someone who hates when they put the actors on the book.
I agree. And I think one of the things that makes me very happy is that we have way more fault in our stars with the original cover than with the movie cover.
I'm glad. I've never actually read the book.
It's pretty good. If you want to cry a lot.
I'm good. I'm good on the crying level.
Okay.
Where were we? Going into the woods.
Into the woods. Also coming out in theaters.
It is.
Great. Along with Unbroken, which was a book before it was a movie.
I don't know what Unbroken is.
That's a movie about a World War II soldier.
Oh!
First he's an Olympian, and then he's a soldier. Movie. And then he gets taken into, then he becomes a POW, and mm-hmm. basically, like, his story of survival. Huge, it's been a huge book, and then now because Angelina Jolie directed the movie, it's gonna be a movie, and it's gonna be awesome. I hope. I have a lot of hope for female-directed movies. I mean, if you think about, like, Hurt Locker, right? Female-directed movie about the Iraqi war and the war against terror IEDs. Yeah. Anyway, I just have hopes. Because the more that women produce amazing things in Hollywood, the more that mediocre things can also be produced by women in Hollywood and we can just disseminate. Because the difficulty right now is you have to be amazing
right.
to get anything done. Whereas if you're, I'm going to be misandrist right now. If you're a man, you can basically do mediocre things and people will still see it.
Never mind. I'm also excited for Rosewater.
Truth bomb. I don't know Rosewater.
Mm. It's, John Stewart wrote and directed it.
Oh.
Yeah. And it's about, this, is he from Jordan? No. I think he's English, the guy, but he went to Iraq or Iran, I don't remember now. I think Iraq.
Yeah.
And was filming, he's a journalist and he was filming some stuff and got arrested and put into prison and was, like, tortured and stuff. Good. But, like, you know, got out, I'm assuming, sure. and, like, remains
told
hopeful.
A story.
Right. But one of the interesting things is that he was on the Daily Show.
Yeah.
And, like, before he was arrested.
Oh.
He was on the Daily Show, and his prison, like, his guards or whatever, the people running the prison, played the clip for him of him mm-hmm. on the Daily Show. And it's him and this, one of the correspondents, Jason Jones.
Yep.
Who's pretending to be a spy, United States spy, and is saying, like, you know, I'm a spy. What do I need to know about, I think it's Iran.
Yeah.
Jordan. And then this guy's like, you just need to know that we feel the same way about, like, Al-Qaeda as you do, that we're also against this terrorist organization and whatever. And I guess the guards were like, why are you talking to an American spy? And he's like, why would an American spy have a TV show? Like, so, yeah.
That's amazing.
But anyway, so I want to see that really badly.
Yeah, that sounds good.
Yeah.
I still haven't seen Mockingjay Part 1.
Ooh, I saw that.
Was it good?
It was.
Okay. I just have mixed feelings, mostly about book adaptations.
I appreciate the Hunger Games movie adaptations
okay.
more than other book adaptations, and I will tell you why.
Ooh, good.
Because the book is very first-person limited.
Correct.
Like, all we see is Katniss.
Correct.
Whereas in the movies, they have a more omniscient narrator.
Ooh.
And so you see Katniss and all of that stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
But you also see, like, Haymitch bargaining to, like,
right.
people to
mm-hmm,
get things.
Mm-hmm.
Or, like, you know, you see that other stuff happening behind the scenes.
Do you see Peeta and Joanna, like, getting tortured in the Capitol? No!
It, oh.
I just hate it inside my sweatshirt.
You don't see them tortured, but you see them. And as a person who loves PETA more than she should, it was very difficult.
PETA is amazing. PETA is the damsel in distress.
He's so wonderful. He's just... And to see... Oh! So yeah, part of it's sorry, very painful. Carrie. I like what... Yeah. And then it ends at, like, the part where, like, he comes back.
Oh, right. Like, I figured that was where he would yeah, end it.
And I went with Evan, who forgot that happened.
Oh, no!
And so he's like, oh, this is nice! I was like, it's about to not be nice! And I was just, like, freaking out.
Oh,
anyway.
No, that's the sad.
Oh, it was so sad.
Oh.
So now I just really want part two to come out, because yeah. I just really need that reconciled in my life. Yeah,
seriously.
So, yeah.
Yeah. That's like, oh, good books.
Right?
Ugh.
I read them twice, like, very quickly.
Mm-hmm. I kind of want to read Divergent, although I heard it's not as good. Like, Allegiant is apparently not as good, the third book.
And, like, so. I didn't really ever want to read that book.
I think it's mostly because I see it all the time.
Probably. I read the City of Bones.
I was just going to say, that whole, is that series any good? Because I shelved that all the time.
I really enjoy the first three of them.
Okay.
But then... I feel like it kind of, like, I read the first three, and I was like, oh, that was a cool series. Mm-hmm. And then, like, she came out with the fourth one, and I was like, huh! So I read the fourth one, and I was like, meh. Because I just felt like the third one, like, everything was kind of wrapped up, and then it was like, we're going to create more conflict for book four. And I was like,
no.
The life was fine.
Yeah.
Just leave it.
It's really interesting, because everything's getting produced as a series right now.
Yeah.
And it's funny, like, when I recommend classic books, like The Giver... People are like, oh, should I get the other ones? And I'm like, no.
No.
Well, is it if it's a series, I'm like, But just it's never going to be a series where, like, you could sit around and debate which of the three Hunger Games books is better, or which of, like, the Harry Potter books is better. Like, there's...
Right.
There can be only one. And it is The Giver.
And it is The Giver. Such a good book.
Okay,
we've
deviated.
We've deviated for a long time on that one. I don't. Still going into the woods
because we went into the woods,
which is coming out in theaters.
That's right, along with Unbroken. No,
no, really. So they go in the woods to where Grop is, but he's not there.
Yep.
Because he's broken free from his chains. And I think at this point they feel kind of guilty because they've just been straight up ignoring Grop. Like, they've never gotten
yeah,
to see
exactly.
him, which you can't really blame them for, I think, but whatever.
He's terrifying.
And so they're there and,
the centaurs arrive.
Right. Hermione's kind of stalling, like, oh, it should be around here somewhere.
Yeah, and Harry's like,
what is your plan, you crazy person? And Umbridge is like, I want to find the weapon.
Yep.
And then the centaurs come.
Mm-hmm.
And they're pissed.
Because there's humans in their woods.
Because there's humans in their woods.
They don't like that.
No. Not
and then
fans.
I think Umbridge almost immediately refers to them as filthy half-breeds. And they're like, excuse me.
They're like,
with, I think, limited intelligence. And she's like, and they're like, quoi?
They're like, Zedeh? And she's like, and they're like, and then... Yes?
That was amazing. I want to do the rest of the podcast just in gibberish.
That would be pretty awesome.
Clump, clump, clump. Oh, excuse me.
Yeah,
the centaurs attack and drag off on bridge. Which is problematic if you know anything about centaur lore.
I don't know anything about centaur lore.
Centaurs in Greco-Roman mythology are sort of in the same realm as Pan. They get kind of nicey-dated up for little children and such, but they're really, really not down with the whole consensual part of sex.
Oh, yeah.
So,
this part I know.
The fact that centaurs drag off Umbridge and she experiences, like, PTSD when we meet her in the next book. It's not good.
That's not good.
Like, we just have to hope that J.K. Rowling didn't know about that, and then we have to admit that J.K. Rowling probably did.
There's, in a Harry Potter sequel...
Good.
Umbridge is the main antagonist in that one.
I should be.
And there's a centaur. And she, Umbridge is played by the same man who played Voldemort in the first
amazing.
One.
That's amazing.
Which is just straight up amazing. So, and the way that he plays Umbridge is that she's quite the manly female.
Oh, okay.
You know?
That's a little weird.
Which is kind of, yeah, but...
It's a little transphobic, but okay. We'll pass it.
Not, like, in the context of the play, I wouldn't say it is.
Oh, okay. I need to see it.
Yeah.
All right.
Because, like, it's not like they're saying that that's necessarily a bad, like, it's not her masculinity that makes her bad, it's her, the fact that she's, like, torturing people.
Okay, fair enough.
Anyway, I don't know, maybe watch it, and maybe that's just me defending it, because I love it, but...
Fair enough. I haven't seen it, so I can't.
So, in it, there's a centaur, and they realize that Umbridge, so in the play, the centaurs have a population problem, and they realize that Umbridge is the only woman strong enough in order to, like, birth a centaur, and there's, like, anyway, it's actually really funny, sorry to disturb you.
I'm horrified with my face, dear listeners.
Sorry to disturb everyone, but it's actually really, like, it's a really kind of funny way
the
to,
touching?
Like...
Is, are there roses?
No, well, probably, but... I mean, we don't see it actually occur.
Well, that's good.
It's just like, enough, that's kind of how Umbridge, like, leaves. Spring Awakening?
It's a musical that was, like, super hot on Broadway 3 years ago, I think. No, pre-Glee.
Okay.
So, 2009?
Was Lea Michele in it?
Yeah, Lea Michele was in it. That's how I could date it.
That's what I figured.
That was, like, her breakout role was on Spring Awakening on Broadway. And it's about, it's based on journals of German kids... or journals about German kids in the 1910s, I'm pretty sure. And it's basically, like, all of this Freudian, like, repressed sexual desire type stuff. And then one kid, like, experiences things outside of that repressed sexual desire thing that's being sort of cultivated in these kids. And then just basically starts spreading that among all of these kids at this private school, like, where he's, like, he's having sex with this one girl. And then, like... gets her pregnant, and then this other, it's just, it's awful. It's, like, everything is bad. In the end, lots of people are dead. It's not good. I'm not really sure, and, like, it's, and it's a rock opera, so there's, like, it's just, it's very intense.
Weird.
But yeah, Lea Michele and Jonathan Groff had sex on stage. Like, had very, very, very simulated sex, but right. It was...
creepy.
It was hard to tell, apparently, that it was simulated, and I'm like, that's... why? Why do we need to do this? Why? What's wrong with Fade to Black?
Weird.
We're off topic.
We're very off topic. We're still in the woods.
So, in the woods.
And I think Grop, like, shows up at some point.
He does.
But I don't think he does very much.
I think he just, like, hits things with his club.
Yeah. So the centaurs drag Umbridge away, and then Harry's like, Hermione, we have to get to Sirius!
Yeah.
And she's like, alright, buddy! And so, do the DA kids show up?
Yep. Ron and Luna and Ginny and Neville all show up.
Yep.
And they're like, hey, how'd you get out? And Ron's like, oh, I dropped a bunch of candies from the Weasley's Wizarding Wheezes. And they ate them. And then they're like, suffocating under their own tongues the size of tons, or the weight of tons right now. And in the movie, Hermione says, that was clever, Ron.
That was clever, Ron.
And he says always the tone of surprise, but that's a movie thing only.
Yeah.
But I think there's definitely, like, an appreciation moment where it's like, oh, Ron is actually quite clever.
Ron actually did something.
When we need to rely on Ron, he's very good.
Yes.
When anybody else can do things, he's a total mess.
Right.
But as soon as he's the only one who can handle it...
he's good.
He's great. We totally skipped Quidditch. When he becomes the king.
Oh, right.
At some point...
At some point,
Ron gets good at Quidditch.
Ron gets really good at Quidditch, and the Gryffindors change the Weasley is our king song to be really positive.
Yeah, Weasley is our king. He never lets the Quaffle in.
Right.
Rather than
and that's why the Gryffindors all sing Weasley is our king.
So much going on in this
book. And I feel like we just want to get to the end. Yeah.
And
so,
book six? Yes. Okay, so we are hurtling on towards the end, so they're like, okay. We've got to go to London and save Sirius Black from Voldemort. Right?
Yeah, no, that's right. I was just thinking, like...
I was trying to think if there was a song, but I think it's... we've got to save Ginny Weasley from the Basilisk.
No, I was just thinking, like... I've said it in many podcasts.
Okay.
So, sorry for being repetitive. Wait.
What shape is the Star of Harry Potter's world?
Oh my gosh, we didn't say. Harry Potter
has
a lightning bolt shaped scar. On his forehead, underneath his untidy black hair.
And broken glasses.
Above his green eyes. That are like his mother's. Yeah. I was going to say, just, of course it's a group of Gryffindors plus one Ravenclaw.
Right.
That are like, we're 5th years.
Yeah.
At Hogwarts.
Yeah.
We can definitely make it to London and save Sirius Black from Voldemort.
We're not going to connect
totally with, something we could do.
We're not going to connect with any other adults. We're not going to try McGonagall. We're not going to try Lupin. We're not going to try the freaking Minister of Magic.
We tried Snape, who hates Sirius and exactly. Harry, and he said nothing. So
clearly it's
clearly
up to us.
It's just us.
We're the last ones left.
Anyway.
Yep.
So they're like, how are we going to get to London? And some of them get broomsticks, but not all of them. And then Luna's like, hey.
Hey.
I got a plan. And
I'm a crazy girl with a plan.
I'm a crazy girl with a plan. Listen to me. And she and Harry go find some Thestrals.
Yep.
The winged horses that you can only see if you have seen someone die. And, like, so they help people find them and then get on them and fly.
Yep.
Which has to be super weird for those that can't see them.
Yeah, I think Ron comments, like, I wish I could see this. And Harry says, you'd better hope you don't. So they fly off to London.
They
ditch the Thestrals somewhere?
Somewhere, apparently.
I hope they tie them up, because you don't really want Thestrals wandering around London and freaking people out.
That's true.
Like, either eating apples invisibly, or... People are like, Thestrals! Yeah, maybe they're like pigeons.
Yeah, maybe they just like fly back home.
Believe that.
Also, like...
I don't know where you're going.
How fast can a Thestral fly?
Because... is it a laden or an unladen Thestral?
So please, myself. That was amazing.
Thank you!
But, like, it takes them all freaking day on a train to get from London to Hogwarts. If you fly on a Thestral, it takes you, like, 20 minutes. Because they're there pretty dang
quickly.
That's
true!
And also, they're not, like, freezing when they get there.
That's true.
Anyway.
Interesting.
Just a thought I have.
Is that a plot? There's got to be an explanation for that.
I'm sure there is, but...
All right. So, London.
London.
London. And they get to the... So Harry knows how to get into the visitor's entrance, which is basically the only way they can get in. And so he takes them in and he says into the speakerphone that you have to speak to in the broken telephone booth, like, we're here to save someone unless your ministry can do it first. And so all of their name badges print out with, like, Harry Potter rescue mission. And I'm like, that's the best. I hope they saved it. If I were Luna, I totally would have saved it. You know she's got that shit in a box somewhere.
Oh, for sure.
And Neville.
Yeah.
Neville probably treasures it.
I feel like Harry discarded it, but someone picked it up.
That's true.
And now it's on eBay.
What would Wizard eBay be?
I don't know.
Wizbay?
I don't know.
Ebang? Oh, no. Sometimes things come out of my mouth without that before I think.
Let's just go with they don't have internet, so
right.
Mundungus Fletcher is selling it on the street somewhere.
There you go. Perfect. Dobby's so, got it on an altar.
Dobby definitely has it. Woo! Yeah, so they get into the ministry. Mm-hmm. They go through wherever. I think Harry saw the entrance to the Department of Ministry when he was there for his trial at the beginning of the book,
Right. And he gets into a hallway, and then that hallway takes him to the room with spinning doors. Remember that?
Yeah.
Totally not in the movie.
Totally not in the movie.
Disappointing. Would have been awesome.
I was, like, so looking forward to seeing that part.
Yeah.
It was just like when, in the 4th book, I was super excited to see the maze.
Sphinx?
And the Sphinx.
Yes.
And it wasn't there.
No.
And now in the 5th movie, I was so excited to see the room with the spinning doors and all the random doors.
Mm-hmm.
Not there.
Yeah. So in one room, there's brains in a jar.
There's brains in a jar that attack you.
Yeah. They get a hold of Ron at some point.
Is it Ron or Neville?
I thought it was Ron.
Okay. We'll go with Ron because it's always Neville and that makes me sad. So we'll just go with Ron.
Yeah.
So then they get out of there and then the doors spin.
Yeah. So you can't get back in the same room again.
So you don't,
know which
room you're going to go into.
Yeah.
And Harry's pissed because he's like, I've seen this door like a kajillion times in my dreams, can't find it. So Hermione places a red X then on like the brain door. Then there, I think there's like another door that they go in, but I don't remember.
I think it's just, I don't remember what it is. There's something. Oh, well, they pass through the room with a veil. They pass through the room with this veil hanging between these two doorposts.
They pass through it once before?
I think so, yeah.
Okay.
And Harry's like, do you guys hear those voices? And they're like, no. And Luna's like, I hear them! And it's like, thanks! Thanks, crazy girl!
And Harry's like, oh, great! I'm insane! This is good!
Mm-hmm.
So then...
And they go back.
Yeah.
But so eventually...
Yeah. Eventually, they open the door. And it's the... Or it's what Harry's been seeing in his dreams.
Yes, which is... Hall of Prophecies?
Sure.
Okay, I'm called that.
The Hall of Prophecies. This is where he saw Sirius being tortured.
Mm-hmm.
He can't find him.
Nope.
He doesn't see Sirius. He doesn't hear any yelling.
There's no blood.
There's no blood. There's no sign of Voldemort anywhere.
Yeah.
And Harry's like, okay.
We're going to have to review for me. I remember what happens in the movie, but I don't remember what happens in the book. How does he get the prophecy?
I think, okay, in the movie, Neville's like, it's got your name on it.
Yeah.
I think that Harry is led to, like, Harry's been seeing us. Okay, so when the dreams start off, he's only in the hallway.
Mm-hmm.
And then as they progress, he's getting closer, like, he's getting more details. And I think in the dreams, he's been told it's row number whatever.
94. I think.
Sure. And it's, like, and in whatever place. Like, I think he's seen that place, and so that's where he goes right away.
Right, because in the vision in the movie, he sees Sirius being tortured there, but I think it's in the visions of his dreams in the book that he sees it there.
Right.
Yeah.
So then he goes, and he sees this, almost like a crystal ball thing that says Harry Potter question mark.
Yeah, Harry Potter question mark.
And then and Lord Voldemort or Tom Riddle?
I think it's He Who Must Not Be Named.
Oh, probably. So Harry's like, huh, that's interesting, and I think picks it up.
Yeah, probably. Because why not?
And it's warm in his hand, if I remember correctly.
Interesting.
I think.
I think Hermione's probably like, Harry, put it the frick down.
Why do you touch all the buttons? I just realized we should probably get the book for the...
Prophecy?
Yeah.
Okay, you go get the book in all detail.
You talk.
I don't know what's going on now.
Do they get attacked?
Yeah, I think that's when all the Death Eaters show up, and they're like, hey! And they're like, ah, crap. Death Eaters are here. This is bad. And the Death Eaters are like, hey! And Harry's like, where's Sirius? And they just keep laughing. And keep laughing at him. And Bellatrix is particularly awful and just laughing hysterically. And Neville is clearly deeply upset because it's Bellatrix Lestrange, and he wants to kill her because she tortured his parents into his sanity. And, it's a great line in the movie. I don't know if it's in the book, but it's, you know, she says, how are Mom and Dad? And he says, better not now that they're about to be avenged, and, like, tries to get her, and it's so cute, because he's so terrible. And, so, basically, they're trying to get Harry to give them the prophecy, and he's like, well, why?
Oh. The prophecy. Okay, it says, Oh, Ron tells him.
It's got your name on.
Ron says, have you seen this? What's it, Harry? And then Ron's, like, just staring, and Harry's like, what? And Ron's like, it's got your name on it. And then the prophecy says, S-P-T to A-P-W-B-D, Dark Lord and question mark Harry Potter. Yeah. He expected it to feel cold, but it did not. On the contrary, it felt as though it had been lying in the sun for hours, as though the glow of light was warming it.
Mm-hmm.
So he gets a crystal ball. Oh, yeah, and then the Death Eaters attack.
Yeah, and Lucius Malfoy's like, give me the prophecy. And Harry's like, why? And he's like, give me the prophecy. And Harry's like, no!
No!
We're serious! And basically, there's just a lot of fighting.
Yeah. And then they must start going through the rooms.
I think trying to escape, yeah.
Yeah.
What do you seek?
Well, I'm trying to find the prophecy, but I thought it was...
He doesn't actually hear it. It's only when Dumbledore repeats it. Because what happens... So basically they go running around.
Oh, I thought it broke and he heard it in the middle of the fight.
He hears like a tidbit of it.
Okay.
I think at the very end or something. And
aha.
So
somehow they end up back in the room with the veil? Or am I lying? Is that just movie?
I think they do end up. No, they do end up in the room with the veil.
Yeah.
But they basically go running around, and the Death Eaters are attacking the kids, and it's bad. It's very bad. They're not doing so well.
Yeah.
Because they're fifth years.
I mean, they're doing a decent amount.
Right.
There is that cool moment, which is in the, like, it's in the movie, but it's also in the book, because I remember reading it, where, so the Death Eaters are all kind of, like, surrounding Harry and the and the rest of them, and they, like, they're also in a circle. Mm-hmm. It's, like, two concentric circles.
Yeah.
And Harry, like, I want to say, like, someone, like, kind of nudges his hand or something.
Yeah.
And, like, there's some, like, secret, like, or whatever. And then, like, Harry yells something and they all strike at once.
Oh.
Like, there's some sort of...
I don't remember what that is.
There is a mind meld going on.
Of course there is.
Within
yeah.
the DA. Good job, anyway, DA. That... Yeah. So then, Death Eaters are fighting.
Yeah.
Kids are fighting.
Yep.
Then they end up back in the room... with the veil.
Right. The Order of the Phoenix shows up.
Yes.
Hurrah! Tonks appears. Lupin appears. Mad-Eye Moody appears.
Sirius Black appears.
Yay! Sirius is okay. Shit! Sirius is okay!
Oh, shit!
We just blew the cover of everything and got ourselves into massive trouble, and Sirius is fine. Neville runs into the room with the brains, and one gets smashed on, or no, Ron, I don't remember. I think it's Ron. And, like, the brain is, like, trying to eat him.
Yep.
And,
Oh, because they're trying to run back through, like, I think, so they get the prophecy.
Yeah.
And then they start fighting, and I think they're trying to run back and get out of there.
Yeah.
And out of the ministry, and that's when they end up in all the rooms.
Yeah.
I'm back. Sorry.
And at some point, Neville's wand gets broken, so he's basically out of the league. Luna's not doing super hot because Luna's a little spacey. Ginny's kicking ass.
Ginny's kicking ass. Yep.
And, but then the Order of the Phoenix shows up and that's great. And, then Bellatrix and Sirius start dueling.
Yes. And is there the part in the book where, Sirius and Harry are dueling together, and he's like, good luck, or good job, James.
Oh, and, at one point, Harry falls down and breaks the prophecy.
Yeah. At some point, Harry falls, the prophecy's broken.
He, like, tries to toss it to Neville, and Neville's like, bleh! And drops it.
Yep.
Oh, which is super interesting.
Yeah.
We'll get back to that.
Okay, so then they're all fighting, and it looks like Dumbledore comes.
Yeah, Dumbledore appears.
Dumbledore appears and is like, oh, Harry felt a kind of electric charge surge through every particle of his body. They were saved. Because Dumbledore is there. So, Sirius and Bellatrix are still dueling. Keep in mind, they're cousins.
Right.
Just for kicks. And Sirius is laughing at Bellatrix, and she's, like, hitting him with a spell, and he's ducking, and he's like, come on, you can do better than that. And then, I'm just gonna read.
Yeah. Gosh, this is awful.
Okay. Only one couple were still battling, apparently unaware of the new arrival. Harry saw Sirius duck Bellatrix's jet of red light. He was laughing at her. Come on, you can do better than that, he yelled, his voice echoing around the cavernous room. The second jet of light hit him squarely on the chest. The laughter had not quite died from his face, but his eyes widened in shock. Harry released Neville. Apparently he was holding Neville, though he was unaware of doing
Neville's got a broken nose. I don't remember why.
Yeah.
He gets hit in the face.
He gets hit, yeah. He was jumping down the steps again, Harry, pulling out his wand as Dumbledore turned to the...
Dais?
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 To...
D-A-I-S.
We don't know what that word
Circular
is.
Thingy.
Yeah. It seemed to take Sirius an age to fall. His body curved in a graceful arc as he sank backward through the ragged veil hanging from the arch. And Harry saw the look of mingled fear and surprise on his godfather's wasted, once handsome face as he fell through the ancient doorway and disappeared behind the veil, which fluttered for a moment as though in a high wind and then fell back into place. Harry heard Bellatrix's triumphant scream, but he knew it meant nothing. Sirius had only just fallen through the archway. He would reappear from the other side at any second. But Sirius did not reappear. Sirius, Harry yelled. Sirius! He had reached the floor, his breath coming in searing gasps. Sirius must be just behind the curtain. He, Harry, would pull him back out again. But as he reached the ground and sprinted towards the
dais,
Lupin grabbed Harry around the chest, holding him back. There's nothing you can do, Harry. Get him! Save him! He's only just gone through! It's too late, Harry. We can still reach him! Harry struggled hard and viciously, but Lupin would not let go. There's nothing you can do, Harry. Nothing. He's gone.
Oh, it just hurts so much!
I have to say, too, that this is done amazingly in the film.
It's so painful and beautiful in the film.
I heard a thing, which I don't know if it's true, but they said that, like, I think it's really cool how they just block out the sound and you just see Harry, yes, like, freaking out. I heard at one point that it was one of the producers suggested that or something, because the scream that Daniel Radcliffe had, he was like, there's no way people are gonna be able to survive that. Like, it was so heartbreaking, and I was like, oh, serious?
Yeah.
So the only family that Harry felt he really had is gone.
It's gone. So Harry chases Harry breaks away from Lupin and chases Bellatrix down, tries to use, I think, Crucio on her, and she, like, shakes it off. And tries to use Avada Kedavra, and she's basically like, you don't have the power. Like, anger is something, like, you need hatred, and you don't have it.
You don't have hatred for me. And Harry's like,
yeah.
And then Voldemort shows up.
Yep, then Voldemort shows up.
Voldemort's like, hey!
Hey, I'm Voldemort!
What's up?
How's it going?
I made you come here, because I gave visions.
I put visions in your brain, because I'm
because I'm evil and I wanted to know what the prophecy said.
Right, and then he's like, give me the prophecy, and Harry's like, nah, it's smashed.
Ned broke it. And Voldemort's like, you've got to be freaking kidding me.
All of my planning is wasted. And Voldemort and Dumbledore fight.
Yep.
Basically, Voldemort, the movie captures this pretty well, I think.
Yeah. I love this.
Oh, that's right. Do it.
Okay, so they're fighting, or no? Are they fighting at this point? Sure.
Yeah.
Wow, dang. Anyway, Dumbledore shows up and says just awesomely to Voldemort, he's like, it was foolish of you to come here tonight, Tom. And one of the most badass things I think about Albus Dumbledore is that he calls Lord Voldemort Tom.
Yep.
Like Tom Riddle. Like, no, I'm not going to give you the name you invented for yourself when you became like this...
To terrorize people.
No, you're Tom frickin' Riddle. I plucked you out of an orphanage, young man. Yeah.
Could have taken better care of you.
Could have probably taken better care
Maybe
of you.
Maybe should have left you in the orphanage and not taught you how to use magic. But.
But. Well, I think he thought he could control it.
Yeah.
Anyway, so then Dumbledore says, like, the auras are on their way, and then Voldemort's like, at which time I will be gone, and you will be dead. And then they fight.
And they fight, and Voldemort's like, bah! And Dumbledore's like, bah!
Yeah!
Basically, and then...
the auras start showing up, I think.
No, Voldemort possesses Harry's body, just like in the movie. Yeah. I don't remember how Harry gets rid of him in the book.
So, yeah. Oh, so during this point, it's just Voldemort, Dumbledore, and Harry in this area of the Ministry that they're fighting. And there's a not a waterfall.
A fountain.
Fountain. There's a thank you for knowing this. So the fountain that has a centaur, a witch, a wizard, a house elf.
Goblin? House elf.
House elf.
Goblin.
Goblin. Yeah.
I think that's it.
So, I just remember the centaur, because Dumbledore magics them to life and makes them hold Harry against a wall.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so the centaur, like, pins him so that he can't fight. So, Harry's just like, meh. In the movie, Harry's just, like, hanging out.
Yeah.
But
Harry's just watching.
Yeah. And at some point, Dumbledore knocks him back. But in the book, he's actually, like, held up against a wall. And then... at some point, Voldy's like, well, I'm not gonna kill Dumbledore.
Right, so. I'm clearly not able to do that, so...
yeah. And then Harry Scarborough's open, he knew he was dead, it was beyond pain.
Yeah, basically Voldemort possesses him and makes him experience horrific pain. And says, kill me, Dumbledore.
Yeah. Kill me now, Dumbledore. If death is nothing, kill the boy. And then Harry thinks, like, just let this pain stop. Mm-hmm. Like, just kill me, Dumbledore. Like, as long as I'm not in pain, like, death should be fine. And, like, I'll be with Sirius.
Yeah.
He's a little not mentally... No. Plus, he's in severe pain.
Yeah.
And then... Oh, he says...
And then basically...
I'll see Sirius again. And as Harry's heart filled with emotion, the creature's coils, which was, like, him, Voldemort possessing him...
Mm-hmm.
The coils loosened, the pain was gone, and Harry was lying face down on the floor. His glasses gone, shivering as though he lay upon ice, not wood.
Yeah.
So he, like, thinks of Sirius and then...
Yeah.
So...
Because Voldemort neither understands nor has the capacity to love.
Right. And then I think all the Aurors show up, and Fudge is here, or Fudge... is there along with mm-hmm. them, and they all saw Voldemort.
Yeah.
And they're like, damn it. And Fudge is like, oh, he is back. And Dumbledore's like, yeah.
Told you so.
Been telling you that.
Thanks
for
wasting a whole year.
Yeah. So then Harry's sent back to school.
Yeah.
And he's probably super depressed.
I think he just hangs out. No, I think he's sent to Dumbledore's office.
Yeah, he hangs out in Dumbledore's office. Yeah. Oh, yeah, and then he gets pissed.
Yeah, and when Dumbledore gets there, Harry breaks everything in the office.
Harry's just, like, throwing
It just hurts. It hurts too much. I don't want to live through this grief. This is too much pain. I just can't take it. Like, breaks everything he can get his hands on. And, I'm not sure how Dumbledore gets him to calm down.
I'm trying to find the part where Dumbledore is like, please continue to destroy my possessions. Yeah. I have far too many of them. Like, Dumbledore is very much like, nope, you just need to destroy things.
Yeah.
Oh,
here it is.
Oh, yeah. So Harry's, like, throwing junk and, like, yelling at Dumbledore. And then I think, like, Harry tries to leave the office and Dumbledore is like, nope. And Harry's like, let me out. And Dumbledore says, no. And then he's like, if you don't let me. And then Dumbledore says, by all means, continue destroying my possessions. I dare say I have too many of them.
Mm-hmm.
And then Harry keeps yelling. And I think here's where he calms down. Because Dumbledore says very clearly, it is my fault that Sirius died tonight. Mm-hmm. Or I should say it, almost entirely my fault. And so he talks about how, like, I should have been teaching you occlumency, mm-hmm. And I should have told you that Voldemort was probably going to try and lure you into the Department of Ministries, and therefore you wouldn't have been tricked into going there, and all of, yeah. And so Dumbledore's like, it's my fault, it's not your fault.
Yeah.
And so Harry's, like, kind of calming down. And then we learn that Snape got a hold of Dumbledore
mm-hmm.
when Snape was like, I don't know what he's talking about.
Well, he contacted Sirius.
Yeah, Snape contacted Sirius and was like, hey, you're cool. And
Sirius was like, I hate you, yes.
Sirius was like, I hate you, you suck, but yeah, I'm totally fine, what's up? mm-hmm. Snape then contacts Dumbledore and says, like, hey.
BT-dubs.
Harry thinks that he saw Sirius being tortured.
Yeah.
But Sirius is fine. And Dumbledore's like, okay, can someone tell Harry? And Snape can't find Harry.
Yeah.
And... If you recall, when Harry popped up in the fire at Grimmauld Place, he asked Creature if Sirius was at home. House elves have to tell the truth to their master.
Right.
And they have to obey their master.
Right.
Harry is not the master of Creature.
Right.
So Creature can lie however much he wants to Harry.
Correct.
So when he said that, Sirius was actually in Grimmauld Place somewhere, just not by the fireplace.
He was hanging out with Buckbeak, I think.
Yeah. So, there's that. And then I think they just keep talking.
Yeah, they just do, you know, the traditional explanatory bit at the end of every Harry Potter book where Dumbledore's like, here's what just happened.
Yeah. And we're in my office. Let me explain to you what happened.
Yeah. And so it's like, yeah, Voldemort planted this memory because planted this vision because he wanted you to go get the prophecy because he wanted to hear the prophecy for himself. And Harry's like, well, why does he care? It's because the prophecy is about you and Voldemort. And Harry's like, oh. He's like, well, I don't know what it said because it smashed in the Department of Ministries. And Dumbledore's like, yeah, well, that's just a record of it. And the original prophecy was made to me by,
Sybil Trelawney.
Thank you. Sybil Trelawney. Yeah. If you recall, it was, SPT to A...
WB.
No. A something
WBD. So, Albus, Percival, Wulfric, Brian, Dumbledore.
And so Dumbledore drops a thought into the Pensieve, and then this is what Harry hears.
Are you reading it or
I was going to let you read it.
Oh. I'm not going to do a weird voice.
That's fine.
Okay. The one with the power to vanquish the Dark Lord approaches. Born to those who have thrice defied him, born as the seventh month dies. And the Dark Lord will mark him as his equal, but he will have power the Dark Lord knows not. And either must die at the hand of the other, for neither can live while the other survives. The one with the power to vanquish the Dark Lord will be born as the seventh month dies. Dot, dot, dot.
And the thing I love about Harry is that he says, Professor Dumbledore, what did that mean? There were big words.
There were big words, and it was a scary voice, and I don't know what's going on. And Dumbledore's like, yeah, that's you, buddy.
Yeah, and Dumbledore's basically, says it's a child who was born at the end of the seventh month, July.
Yep. Whose parents defied Voldemort 3 times.
Right, had the power to vanquish Voldemort. And Harry's like, oh, so it means me. And Dumbledore's like, actually, there were 2 boys born to parents who had thrice defied the Dark Lord and was born at the end of July. The other one is Neville Longbottom. And Harry's like, oh, well, why? And why does it say my name on it, then? Why do we assume that it's me? And it's basically because Voldemort went and attacked him, and he survived. So it was like, all right, this is clearly the kid who has the power to vanquish the Dark Lord.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, it's just like, so Voldemort overheard part of the prophecy, and that's why he attacked you and didn't realize that it could also be Neville Longbottom.
Yeah.
Which is sort of a lie, but we'll get into that later.
Yeah?
Snape assumes it's Harry.
Oh, right.
And so therefore tells the Dark Lord don't attack, tries to protect him, so.
Yeah. And so, I'm sorry, I sent a quick text. Did you explain the mark him as an equal thing?
No, I did not.
So,
which is great!
The prophecy says that Voldemort will mark him as his equal, which I don't think Voldemort heard.
No.
So, Voldemort attacks Harry when he's a baby. And I don't know if you know this, but Harry Potter has a lightning bolt-shaped scar on his forehead. Which Lord Voldemort gave him when he attacked him that night.
Right.
And so, Voldemort essentially picked out the person that he was going
to. Marked him.
Picked out his vanquisher.
Yeah.
I don't know what word I want there, but some word.
Yeah, that's his nemesis.
Yeah.
But the cool thing, Dumbledore says, you know, like, he picks you and not Neville. Like, it's important to note, Neville's pure blood. He considered you a half-blood to be the equal, not Neville, the pure blood. And he marked you as the one who can destroy him. And Harry's like, so the prophecy's true, and the prophecy means me, and a prophecy means I'll have to kill him, or he'll have to kill me.
Yep.
And Dumbledore's like, well, I mean, prophecies depend on how much stock you put in them. But listen, if you didn't know about this, how would you feel about Voldemort? And he's like, I'd want him dead, and I don't want to do it.
Right.
Dumbledore's like, he kind of made his prophecy come true.
So nothing's changed.
Yeah.
And Harry's like, nope. Yeah, so that's pretty much...
That's it. That's the...
Oh!
Yeah, do that. Because we miss it in the movie.
I fear I owe you another explanation, Harry, said Dumbledore hesitantly. You may perhaps have wondered why I never chose you as a prefect. I must confess that I rather thought you had enough responsibility to be going on with. Harry looked up at him and saw a tear trickle down Dumbledore's face into his long silver beard. Emo Harry is done. Yeah, then the, basically, the, prophet prints a thing that says, like, hey, Voldemort is back.
So, sorry about the whole lying about him being back thing.
And then everyone who, like, Ron goes to the hospital wing because he was attacked by brains and that kind of stuff. And then it's kind of normal wrap-up, like, it's normal wrap-up, but at the same time, it's like, Voldemort's back and...
So nothing's really normal.
Stuff's gonna start happening.
Which they awkwardly try to deal with at the end of the fifth movie, where they go, everything's different now, isn't it? And Harry just looks at Hermione and goes, yep. Yes.
I like that part better than the other one.
What's the other one?
I
know you're not talking about the Thestrals, so.
No, the one that touched me. Why can't I think of how it starts? But he's like, we're better than Voldemort.
Oh, that's right. Something
worth fighting for. Four. And I would just like to say, on record, okay.
Say it.
The quote is in the movie, but we have something that Voldemort doesn't have, something worth fighting for.
Mm-hmm.
No. Okay? Like, yeah, you do have something to fight for, but so does Voldemort. Mm-hmm. Like, granted, it is not a good thing that he's fighting for, but he's fighting for, like, world domination, essentially, and, like, to be, like, the most powerful wizard and to, like, basically own everyone. Which, again, not a good thing, but to Voldemort, that's something worth fighting for. That's why he's fighting.
Right.
Exactly. So you both have motives. It's not like he's just like, bee-hee-hee-hee. He's not the Joker. He's, like, he has a plan.
Yeah.
Sorry. Rant over.
Okay, but also, the Joker claims to not be a man with a plan, but let's think about his plan.
Yeah, no.
In The Dark Knight Rises.
Well, The Dark Knight.
Right. Second one. Sorry.
Right.
Dark Knight Rises 2. The Dark Knight is awake.
Right.
Right.
But, like...
The Dark Knight shines. The Dark Knight rises, the Dark Knight shines, the Dark Knight gives God the glory, glory.
Wow. I just sound like Batman doing the actions.
That would cure so many small, adorable children in the hospital. Like, would just love to have Batman come and do Rise and Shine and give God the glory, glory.
Totally.
It'd be great. So, yeah. Everybody goes home and, like, basically wrap up. Ginny Weasley is no longer dating whoever she was dating,
Michael.
She's now dating Dean Thomas.
Dean Thomas!
Dean Thomas! And Ron is like, what?! And he's clearly, like, still trying to get Harry and Ginny to hook up. Qua.
There is this fun part where...
Oh, yes. Do it.
So the Order of the Phoenix travel with Harry back to platform 9 3/4
mm-hmm.
and meet him with the Dursleys.
Yeah.
And they're like, hey, knock it off. And if we hear anything about Harry getting mistreated, we're going to punch you in the kneecap.
Also, we might magic you because we can do it even though Harry can't.
Right.
And, doesn't Mad-Eye Moody like say something and Dursley, and Vernon Dursley's like, do I look like I'm the kind of man who can be intimidated? And Mad-Eye Moody, like, shows him his crazy rolling eye, and he's like, yeah, I'd say so.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it just kind of ends on this sort of, like, note.
Which I think is how this book needs to end.
Yeah, that's how it needs to end.
Because stuff's going down now.
Yeah.
But one of Carrie's favorite characters is dead, and so... It's okay. Yeah.
Yep. So that also,
Just a quick shout out to my Aunt Deb.
Oh, hey Deb.
Hey Deb. Because I always think of her when reading this book because I was reading it like at the same time as her, but I was ahead of her.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if you remember this, but when this book was put out, like it was leaked that there, like a main character was going to be killed.
Mm-hmm.
And so like everyone's reading it like, who's gonna die? And throughout the entire book, like, Hagrid is either missing or, like, beaten up. And so I just remember Deb texting me, like, guesses. And I remember at one point she was like, is it Hagrid? Is it Hagrid? And I remember being like, nope. No, it isn't.
No, Hagrid's fine.
Like, I was, yeah, like, at some point, like, I don't know. I just remember texting you, like, I'm not there yet. I don't know who's dead. And then all of a sudden I was like, no, it isn't. It's awful. But it's not Hagrid. Anyway.
Is it Harry?
Nope.
That would have been pretty hilarious.
You know how I said there's gonna be seven? Well,
depends on how you count. It'll now be Hermione Granger. And the let's just get this organized. Gosh.
And the Ron, let's go.
Ron Weasley, and the if no one else can do it, I'm totally cool.
I got this.
Yeah.
Oh, you can do it? Go for it.
Yeah.
I'm fine.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Join us next time. Yeah,
join us next time
for Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince, book the 6.
Whoa, the Half-Blood. Woo! Who knows? Is it Harry? Probably Harry. No, it's not Harry.
It's not.
Fun fact.
Fun fact. It is someone else.
Yep.
So, yeah.
Join us next time for that. Oh, like us on Facebook. We have a Facebook thing now.
We have a Facebook page.
Harry has finals going on, so obviously now we have a Facebook
page. So I'm procrastinating. And we have a Facebook page. It's facebook.com/Carrie and Emmy. Remember.
Perfect.
You should like us. Okay. Bye.
Bye.